This is a podcast from the Canadian Youth Delegation to the UN Climate Change Negotiations. Today, as negotiations kicked off for the second week at the UN Climate Change Conference, the Canadian Youth led an action showing that oil and water don't mix. As well, I had a chance to talk with Claude Généreux from CUPE, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, about intersections between labor and environment. You can see our website for the full interview. And this morning, Erica and Amara posed a series of tough questions during our meeting with Canada's lead negotiator.
When I say offshore, you say no more! Offshore!
No more!
Offshore!
No more!
When I say offshore!
We're here at just outside of the Azteca building at the Moon Palace. Over 20 youth came together, led by the Canadian Youth Delegation, but youth from across the world, to show that oil and water don't mix, meaning show their opposition to offshore drilling and oil tankers going through our oceans. In Canada, this is of particular importance because they're currently looking at expanding tar sands projects, including having tankers shipping off the BC coast through the Pacific Ocean and transporting tar sands crude to Asia to be processed. It's not really a question of if there are abuse spills, but when. For offshore drilling, it's similar. We just saw what happened in the Gulf of Mexico, which is right near where we are here, not too long ago, which is huge consequences for not only the ecosystems, but the communities living around there, for their fishing industry, for their livelihoods. And some of the most fragile ecosystems, including Canada's Arctic, is a place that's being looked at for a new place for offshore drilling. So we're here to say that oil and water don't mix. This is treacherous for communities, for ecosystems. It's dangerous, it's dirty, it's destructive. And we're here talking about climate change. We need to be scaling back our fossil fuel industry. On Tuesday, there is a bill going through the House of Commons that it was putting a moratorium on tankers on the BC coast.
I'm here today with Claude Généreux, the National Officer of CUPE. One of the issues I've heard brought up at the conference and in the context of climate change is the concept of just transition. Could you explain that concept to our listeners?
Yes. Just transition will mean turning the economy to jobs, industry and jobs. There's a correlation to jobs that are really good in this turn, addressing, tackling the climate change. Good jobs, not transient jobs, not cheap labor jobs, not climate change McDonald's jobs, you know, what we used to call the McDonald's jobs, you know, temporary, no job security whatsoever. So that's the job, the just transition. Another analogy that comes to mind, after the Second World War, the industry was completely militarized. We needed to change radically, 180 degrees, the industry to make it back to a civil industry and economy. Well, there was a transition that was needed. Turn the big giant plants that were ammo plants, ammunition plants, building tanks and whatnot, we needed to convert them. That was a transition. So that's what we mean by just transition.
Yesterday morning, I asked Guy Saint-Jacques, Canada's lead negotiator, a question about the Copenhagen Accord. I've been frustrated by his reluctance to directly answer almost any question put to him, but I imagine that he must be in an incredibly difficult position as a negotiator. Monsieur Saint-Jacques' mandate is to negotiate according to the Canadian government's position on climate change, which is such an untenable argument that it leads him to provide answers like this.
My name is Erica. I'm with the Canadian Youth Delegation, and I have a question about the WikiLeaks documents. WikiLeaks has revealed that several countries use development aid to blackmail other countries into signing on to the Copenhagen Accord, which is the major negotiation document that Canadian delegation has been using at these negotiations. And so I'm wondering, in the context of knowing the background of the Copenhagen Accord and how that was reached, as well as in the context of the United Nations being a diplomatic forum based on good faith, if the Canadian government still wants to stand by its statement in Prentice's release in January that referred to the Copenhagen Accord as principled.
Well, I would say that in our case, and I think I mentioned this at a previous meeting last week. First, following the Kananaskis G8 summit, Canada has announced that our foreign aid would be completely untied. When we look at how we would disburse the $400 million as part of our fast-track financing, there was absolutely no consideration about whether countries had signed or not. To give you two examples, we have provided, I think, $5 billion to AP as part of the mitigation measures. Has Haiti signed the Copenhagen Accord? No, they have not signed. Another example, we helped to pay for part of the cost of organizing a ministerial meeting in Grenada. Again, has Grenada signed the Copenhagen Accord? No. And I've met with African colleagues, and they were worried about whether if they don't accept to some of our positions, whether we will cut the fund. And I said, look, you know, Canada does not have a reputation for that kind of game, and we don't intend to start to do that.
My name is Amara. I'm with the Canadian Youth Delegation. Given the fact that the Copenhagen text was negotiated in bad faith, given that it doesn't uphold diplomatic principles of the United Nations, why Canada is supporting that as its primary text? I think that that's our previous question.
Yeah, well, I would say that if you look at the history of international negotiations, in fact, most of the time, you get to agreements the way that an agreement was reached in Copenhagen. This takes place all the time. And in fact, if you want to have results, this is the best way.
Hear more at CanadianYouthDelegation.wordpress.com, citizenshift.org, rabble.ca, or on iTunes.